Everybody, it's Dr. Campbell. It is now, looks like 8:33 a.m. on January 19th, 2023. I'm going to double check here on our roll call after everybody. Oh, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so we have present myself, Dr. Campbell, Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ulano, Heather Broaddus, our executive director, Seamus Monahan, our Esquire, our AAG, Dr. Farahani, and Dr. Saunders, our investigators. Dr. Freestone is present telephonically. Mr. Moskow is present here live with us. We also have Dr. Keith Bangart, Dr. Farahani are present. Dr. Abel Messiah is present telephonically. Mr. Crawford is here live. And Dr. Bangart, Dan Bangart, will not be present. Do we get it? Is that everybody, Heather? Okay, great. So we're going to go ahead and read our statement. It basically indicates that this is a professional administrative meeting and everybody's supposed to conduct themselves in a respectable, professional manner. And if there's any, you know, aggressive behavior, rudeness, anything that we don't tolerate that, and I can reserve the right to not allow people who act that way to address the board. So, you know, we always strive to have meetings that are professional and respectful. Does anyone have any declarations of conflicts of interest in any case that is present on our agenda? Hearing none, we'll move on. We're going to go ahead and bypass our general session minutes for now, and we're going to move on to our investigative files, which is 5B. And our first one we'll hear from this, the investigator is Dr. Saunders, and the complaint number is 21-21-C, which is Dr. Kamran Farahani's case. So, I would ask for Dr. Saunders' report, please.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Thanks for letting me go first, too, as well. So I'm going to talk about 2121C, complaint, I believe it was by the initials SR. And this just seems to be a communication issue. The patient was concerned because the doctor showed up for a house call when she reported that she never did indeed make an appointment. And that's where the confusion, I guess, came in. I spoke with the doctor, and he described the events leading up to the appointment. Patient scheduled an appointment online. It was confirmed by speaking to a member of the family, and the doctor showed up for the appointment. The appointment was actually never, ever conducted. The doctor never actually evaluated the patient or provided any treatment call. He went his own way after a little discussion between the two. I did speak with the complainant, and she reveals that she did indeed in line search for an appointment. When she made the appointment, she thought she was scheduling it to be seen in the office and was not scheduling a mobile appointment, for which she said she never agreed to. She got frustrated a couple times and maybe was unhappy with the office. She called a couple times, never truly got through to anybody. She said she actually never spoke to anybody. Everything was just done online. She says that she never did get a return phone call, and she was surprised by the encounter. She was a little upset because the office called an estranged son that she hasn't spoken to in over a year, and that apparently brought up some wounds as well. When I spoke to the doctor, he confirmed that he just never did indeed evaluate the patient. They had their difference of opinion. There was some concern whether or not the insurance was billed, and doctor never did bill for the encounter. We have a discussion regarding how patients go about making an appointment. There was a discussion that the doctor does call the emergency contacts because most of his clients are elderly and may not have the best communication skills. He admitted that, again, I think I said he never did do it. There was an undertone of, during his meeting with the encounter, that there was some racist language being used. I will say that when I spoke to the complainant as well, I picked up on that as well, which is unacceptable. I did have a conversation when I went to the doctor's website. It was a little unclear to me that it did appear that there were some in-office appointments, which he clarified that he stopped doing pretty much at the beginning of COVID in the office. But on the website, it did kind of appear that it was. Doing a further little review, there was some confusion as to who actually referred the patient and during the health scheduling, and it's probably mute at this point, but the patient did go online, schedule the appointment, called her PCP, got a referral. That was confirmed with the office. I'm not sure if that is relevant or not. When I called the office, I got an answering machine, but I got a call back quickly. So I don't think that was an issue. Outside of that, there were no financials to encounter. There was no billing done. Doctors just seemed to show up for an appointment that I guess never existed, handled himself professionally, even under some distress, which there's some definitely undertone of racism there. I think he conducted himself well. I don't think he exhibited any behavior that was out of the standard of care. And that, there really isn't much to discuss. It seemed like a more of a communication issue.
Thanks, Dr. Saunders. I certainly agree with your report. And, there was, never any contract made between them. So that's another important point to include. Dr. Yolanda or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No questions.
And Dr. Farahani, Dr. Yolanda, did you have something?
No questions.
Thank you. Okay, Dr. Farahani, you may speak if you'd like to make a remark or not.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead. Pardon me? No. The complaint is not on the call. Okay, thank you. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to dismiss complaint number 21-21-C for Dr. Cameron Farahani, seeing that. Violations of state statutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much. Now we're going to move on to Daniel Bangart. This is case 21-12-B. Again, Dr. Saunders is the investigator, and Mr. Moskow is present. Dr. Bangart's counsel. So I'll go ahead and ask Dr. Saunders for his investigator's report.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. Again, 21-12-B. I guess I got this investigation because it came up during a renewal application for licensing that there was he was named as named in a malpractice claim, which was dismissed at that point. Just going through the paperwork, Daniel Bangart, he did send in the evidence of dismissal from the courts that he was he was dismissed from it. I can't remember if it was with prejudice or without, but Dr. Moskow can probably help on that one, but it was the better of the two. Just doing a quick review here, going through the charts and everything, the patient was only seen by Dr. Daniel Bangart twice when he was just providing coverage for a post-operative care during the course. I did go through the charts.
Dr. Saunders, can I interrupt you just briefly? Could you slow down a little bit? It's kind of hard to capture everything you're saying.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
I'm all over the place. No problem. So going through the medical record at Dr. Daniel Bangart's care, he saw the patient twice during as a covering physician, and he was providing some of the post-operative care. At one point, he provided an injection for some neuritis, and another was a wound care. And his care was deemed appropriate and well within the scope of practice. He was dismissed from the legal matter, and I don't see that there was any real wrongdoing in his service during this malpractice case.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No.
Mr. Moskow, anything you'd like to add?
Oh, I would only add in response to Dr. Saunders, wondering about the dismissal. It was a voluntary dismissal with prejudice.
Okay, thank you. So does anyone else have any questions, concerns? If not, I'm going to make a motion to dismiss case 21-12-B, Dr. Daniel Bangart, seeing no violations of state statute.
Seconded.
Thank you very much. Any other discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Our next is Dr. Keith Bangart, and this is again investigating Dr. Saunders, and Dr. Keith Bangart is present with counsel Kenneth Moskow. So, Dr. Saunders, your report, sir.
Sure. Okay. Okay, 2113B, the employee for Dr. Keith Bankard. This is the same case for the covering physician here. So this case was, again, as I mentioned earlier, was settled out of court. Discussion with Dr. Bankard is that he wasn't either negligent nor did he fall beneath the standard of care upon settlement. Again, and we're reviewing this case just as it came up during license renewal. I did speak with Dr. Keith, and we discussed the reason for doing the surgical procedure in the first place, and he felt that the patient was just failing conservative care after an injury, and he felt surgery would be the best way to get her feeling better. Patient did subsequently have some complications. One of the notes, which I'll get to in the medical record, was if any cultures were taken, and the doctor said during the whole course that there was really nothing to culture. You can elaborate that if you need. At one point, the patient's family, which was a minor, the mother was texting. I asked for those pictures, but they were, I guess, no longer available as she was a couple years old at that point. To summarize, during medical records, the patient AC, on a minor, sustained an injury. She went to the emergency room at this point. Radiographs were taken and was deemed to follow up for care of a sprained ankle. Back in 2019, a patient was seen by Dr. Keith. Physical examination showed that there was pain to the lateral ankle. The patient was diagnosed with a sprain and was treated conservatively at this point with a CAM boot. Going through the notes over the next couple of visits, the patient just wasn't improving, even being in a CAM boot, a knee scooter. An MRI was then ordered, and the MRI confirmed that there was a high-grade sprain, and the other ligaments and cells were also injured. And at this point, I think the patient was 4 or 5 weeks, post-injury and not improving. In the chart notes, it's documented well that the patient was limping and was unable to walk on it and not progressing. The doctor then decided to take the patient to surgery on. This was March of 2019. Quite a few procedures were performed. An ankle arthroscopy was an extensive debridement was performed, an ATF repair, and also a syndesmotic repair was performed. Post-operative, the patient seemed to be progressing normally. First op, there was a mild redness, and the patient was actually put on a prescription for Augmentin. Some Elavil, there were also pain issues postoperatively. Then there was a potential pleural from the scope neuritis that was performed by Dr. Dan, the covering physician, did an injection going through the chart series. Following week, sutures were removed and a PT referral as the patient was progressing, documented no redness, no drainage, no erythema. Following a visit, the patient developed a little bit of a rash. Was given a steroid cream. Otherwise, no real signs of infection are documented. And then at this point, almost a month postoperatively after physical therapy, the patient then went to the emergency room for this rash. The patient was given a steroid cream as well as another antibiotic. That was seen by the ER physician. The following day, the patient went to a dermatologist to evaluate this rash as well. A skin testing biopsy was performed. I don't have the results of that. Reading between the lines, the dermatologist did not suspect infection at this point. But that's my opinion. The patient had another nerve block the following office visit, which is about 2 to 3 weeks after being seen after the suture removal. The patient was then subsequently having some pain issues, as it seemed. And then about a month after the first ER visit for the rash, the patient went back to the emergency room for what appears to be infection to her foot. The ER report said, going through the document, that there was a wound culture that was then taken at that point, which was reported as having staph. At that ER visit, the patient was put on another antibiotic, this time doxycycline. And subsequently, from the office visits from the ER, following up at the Dr. Keith's office, there were some now concerns for some drainage from the incision. There was a first report of a wound of about 2 by 2 millimeters, small dehiscence that was newly reported to the lateral side. A patient was then having some problems with the doxycycline and was transferred to another prescription, Omnicef, was then put on that point. That seemed to decrease the redness on the next office visit, which the patient was seen kind of weakly at this point. And then on 5/22, that wound seemed to have a pyogenic granuloma, in which silver nitrate was applied. Following a couple of days after that visit, doctor got a call over the weekend. A text picture was sent from the mom. But there was some redness and warmth. This was the weekend. Doctor saw the patient in the office. The wound increased from 2 millimeters to 4 millimeters, and another refill of the doxycycline was prescribed at that point. Patient was seen back in the office a couple days after that, and then there was a discussion of some concerns because the patient had this granuloma and infection that at some point they may need to remove the hardware. The following week, the doctor was out of town, and a covering physician saw the physician. The wound had increased now to 7 by 7 millimeters with some drainage, and the appearance of a foreign body reaction was documented. And at that point, the patient was then lost for a second opinion. Going through medical records, everything seemed to be billed appropriately. At one point, the doctor billed for a 17110, which is a destruction of tissue or so, and I think maybe this was for the granuloma, the silver nitrate treatment, and maybe the code for 17250 would have been a better code, but I think billing is otherwise really appropriate. Trying to kind of come to a conclusion here, I think the patient was treated conservatively, did not respond appropriately, and then surgical intervention was chosen, which I think is reasonable at this point. Even though the MRI did not show a complete tear, the patient did have an injury to the wrist sprain and wasn't progressing during normal course. There was some intermittent nerve injuries from the arthroscopy portals, and that was treated appropriately during the review. There are some cut and paste during the medical review that they put on here. Picture text was unavailable to see that from what the mother sent. It's always helpful to have a picture if we can review it. I think retrospectively here that the patient probably had some sort of a suture reaction or a reaction to one of the implants that were put in there that got an infection. The timing of when it got infected is actually difficult to ascertain based on records. And it's interesting that the patient at this point went to the ER and was put on antibiotics 5 times during this whole recovery process. Patient was seen by 2 ER staff, a dermatologist, and another podiatrist during this recovery, and at no point did any of the medical personnel feel that this patient needed to be hospitalized or undergo surgery during that recovery period. I think that means that this isn't a raging infection or everything is mild or subdued at that point. Patient did have periods where she was progressing well, according to the records. And then at just the very end there, when the patient was lost for follow-up, is when surgery was performed by another physician. And the patient went and got another opinion. So I think the patient was treated appropriately with antibiotics during the course. If there was no active significant drainage, it's difficult to culture something and get a real accurate reading. I don't think that the patient, I don't think that Dr. Keith went out of the scope or I fell below the standard of care for this patient. And I can try and clarify anything if that will be helpful.
I have a couple questions, Dr. Saunders. One of my concerns that I was thinking about a lot on this was that how much of her post-operative time frame was she was in pain, coming back and forth, and I know there was some discussion regarding chronic regional pain syndrome or RSD, but didn't appear to have any definitive referrals. And if there had been, do you think that would have made a difference in outcome?
No, I don't kind of suspect RSD at all for this. I think that this patient sprained her ankle and was immediately in pain ever since then. And, reading between the lines, between the notes, I think this patient just had a lower threshold for pain. Because even when the patient was non-weight-bearing initially, I think it was the first week, the patient wasn't progressing at all from conservative therapies. The patient was non-weight-bearing in a cambood on a scooter and was limited walking. And, I don't think RSD will start that quickly. And I had low suspicion for RSD the whole way. I think this patient somewhere had a suture reaction, likely from one of the implants. In my practice, whenever I see granulomas formation, that's normally the etiology for me. And, when this got infected, I don't know, and how severe it was. But I don't think the pain issue, obviously whenever there's infection, that can cause some pain too. But I didn't suspect RSD too much. And the patient was in the ER twice.
So, and another question, do you think anything would have been different if a secondary MRI had been done?
During the course of the recovery, you mean?
Yes.
There's always hardware involved with this, with an implant, but the patient was having periods of time where she was responding well, and this was... some of the complications, it's not like this was 6 months down the road. An MRI within a month or two is always going to have kind of a false positive because there was bone work done. There is hardware and surgery done. So I don't know how much more that would have helped. Patient was on antibiotics, so the question comes down to is what point do you decide to go in and remove that hardware and wash it out? And I think that was being discussed as the patient wasn't necessarily responding at an appropriate time. I think that was right before the patient left for a second opinion. I think it was discussed. It looks like it was discussed on 5/28. It's documented, and I think it was a week or so after that the patient went for a second opinion, perhaps because it was discussed.
No,
I don't think an MRI would have changed anything.
Okay. And I had noted these are some issues regarding some documentation that I noticed. There were times where it was documented that the patient had 4/5 strength when they were post-op and in pain. I can't imagine that was probably a repeated or a pre-populated information on a progress note. And there was also documentation of normal sensation when there was descriptions of nerve pain. So,
sure. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there was some cut and paste, actually, between physicians as well. It was noted. There was at one point where in one portion of the line it said there was no redness, and then later down there was some redness that was documented. There's a little bit of a hypocrisy there. And I think that does come from cutting and pasting as well.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilana, do you have questions for Dr. Saunders?
No, he covered the all my questions were already answered. Thank you.
Dr. Ilana?
No question, Dr. Saunders. No questions.
Thank you.
Thank you for your report, Dr. Saunders.
Great. All right. Gentlemen. Mr. Moskow, would you like to remark or hand it over to Dr. Bangard?
I have nothing to say at this point. I'll turn it over to Dr. Bangard if he has anything to add or if you have questions for him.
Do you have anything to add, Dr. Bangard?
Just responding to a couple of the questions you posed there at the end, Dr. Campbell, regarding the 4 out of 5 strength. There are times where we'll cut and paste if it's the same, right? I've had plenty of patients that can have pain and still be able to exhibit strength. You know, it's painful throughout that range of motion. I'll be honest, I can't remember. I'm going to go off the note. It was almost 3 years ago at this point. So, as far as I agree with Dr. that 17250, like that was probably a much more appropriate code. So I will definitely use that. As far as the pictures, I did search through my phone and looked up the numbers on the chart and couldn't find that. I did get a new phone and. Beginning of 2020, and so I think I lost those images when I switched over. Since that time, our medical records system has an app where I'm able to take pictures now and put it directly into the chart, so that has not been an issue from that time forward.
Oh, Dr. Bangard, you had noted too, I believe it was in your response, that you had taken some continuing medical education classes recently again in response to receiving the complaint?
No, it was just part of the 25 hours, and it was, I believe it was on the present, the online one. I believe I did some ankle arthroscopy, just refresher, this is before all this.
Okay. Well, I agree with Dr. Saunders. I think, you know, everything, you know, treated appropriately, and anybody who does surgery knows that sometimes stuff happens. And you do everything you can following it, and it's just part of the whole thing of doing surgery, and it's, you know, it's unfortunate that it happens, but it does. So I don't think there's anything, you know, egregious of decreasing of or poor below the standard of care. But I do, again, have a little bit of concern about documentation and making sure that everything matches up from, you know, like I said, when you remark in one area that sensory exam is normal, yet you're giving an injection for a neuritis or the nerve pain. So I'd like to know if what my fellow board members think, if they feel a non-disciplinary CME is necessary in this instance or none at all. So Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilana, your opinions, please.
She just took CMEs based upon medical records and did get a new medical record system. I don't feel any CMEs are needed at this time.
So you're saying no, right? It's hard to hear you, Dr. Foreman. Needed at this time. All righty. Dr. Ilana?
To me, patients have different pain thresholds, and you've got to react to that. I think Dr. Bangard acted in according manner, accordingly, and to the CME standards. For me, there's no need to for him to go through a CME, extra CME.
So it seems to the opinion here that because there's no breach in standard of care, and we've had some discussion regarding the documentation issues, that I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to dismiss complaint 21-13-B for Dr. Bangert, indicating no violation of state statute.
Second.
Thank you so much. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Did you guys say aye? I didn't hear any.
We were three ayes.
Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Ulano?
Aye.
Thanks.
I said aye.
All right. All opposed? So moved. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Moskow?
Yes.
We need you to fill out one of the...
Oh, sure. Thanks. Grab that from here. Oh, okay, good.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you, Dr. Saunders.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Good. Bye-bye. All right.
Next case is 21-14-C, which is Dr. George Abel Messiah. He is present telephonically, and his counsel is present live, Mr. Bruce Crawford, and we have Dr. Farahani is the investigator on the case. So I will ask to the gentleman, you can come up to the Dr. Farahani for his investigator's report.
Sorry. Hi, this is an investigation report for complaint number 21-14-C. Licensee is Dr. George Abdul Messiah, DPM. My name is Dr. Farahani. The date of this investigation that took place was on 12/28/2021. Here's a summary of allegation. On September 2020, this complaint was filed on behalf of the patient by the patient's wife. On September 2020, RM went to TMC emergency room department as per instruction of a home health RN. The RN was concerned with left foot infection. While at the hospital, RM developed renal failure and was admitted. Patient was at the hospital for 8 days. Patient was in hospital unaware of what was happening due to the pandemic. The wife states that she was calling the hospital to have a doctor call her back in reference to status updates, and no one would call her back. In preparation for surgery, the nurse was instructed by Dr. Abdul Messiah to amputate part of his toe. The wife claims that RM did not sign a consent. The wife states lack of bedside manner by Dr. Abdul Messiah at the post-op visit. The wife states that the post-op visit, a remark by Dr. Abdul Messiah while wanting to remove a staple, quote-unquote, do you want to see him cry? The doctor then asked RM if he would like to return the next day to remove the remaining staples. On November 4th of 2020, RM accompanied with wife went to the VA. They discussed BK below the knee amputation due to carelessness and negligence of Dr. Abdul Messiah with the initial procedure. Wife and the patient RM would like to see a disciplinary action taken against Dr. Abdul Messiah for the hardship that RM went through due to emotional distress, permanent disability, physical hardship, and reduction of self-esteem. And the allegations I came up with through the statute, failing to obtain written informed consent, committing gross malpractice, or committing any conduct or practice that might be harmful or dangerous to the health of the patient. The licensee's written response to allegation was done through his counsel, Mr. Crawford. Patient was admitted to TMC on 9/5/2020. Patient was discharged on 9/24/2020. Patient presented with cellulitis and ulcer of the fourth digit and a left ankle pain, hypotension, and acute kidney injury, likely due to septic shock. It was corrected with fluids. Patient was admitted to ICU after correction of the septic shock and hypotension. Dr. Quint was the on-call podiatrist as one consulted times two surgeries, which included the left fourth digit partial amputation and ankle arthrocentesis. The consent was signed on September 12 and September 14th. September 16th, patient was managed non-surgically with dressing changes, compression dressing applications, monitoring the drain output, IV antibiotics, 9 per infectious disease recommendation, and pain managed as needed. During the course of therapy and after discharge, patient was not compliant with the therapy. After discharge, the patient had multiple missed appointments with infectious disease and Dr. Abdelmaseya. Patient missed appointment with ID on October 5th, October 13th, October 20th, October 26th, October 30th, November the 2nd, November the 5th, and November the 10th. Patient missed appointments with Dr. Abdelmaseya's office on 9:25, 10:08, 10:16, and 10:28. During post-discharge office follow-up, patient admitted to poor compliance with therapy and admitted to picking at his wound frequently, which complicated the therapy. Patient also requested a prescription for Dilaudid, note written as the patient was discharged from TMC with prescription of oxycodone 10 milligrams. Throughout the hospitalization and post-discharge period, Dr. Abdelmaseya shares that he was 100% available to assist RM to recover and return to function as fast, as healthy as possible. He even went ahead and filled an FMLA paperwork for his job to allow him to recover at home. He claims that the patient was difficult due to non-compliance with therapy, multiple psychiatric issues, including depression and PTSD, suspicion of drug-seeking behavior, and non-compliance with follow-ups with Dr. Abdelmaseya and infectious disease. He was notified about the poor outcome RM suffered. A BK after a complaint was filed. Neither the patient nor his significant other contacted him to discuss the situation prior to the complaint. I went ahead and reviewed medical records that consisted of 264 pages. I have made some key points for the sake of time and thoroughness. It begins by September 7th of 2020. There was a left ankle pain, swelling, and erythema. There was a CT of the left lower extremity performed. The CT reported tibiotalar and subtalar joint effusion with synovitis and tibiotalar joint fluid decompressing into the flexor hallucis longus tendon sheath. There was a clinical concern for septic arthritis and septic tenosynovitis. Fluid sampling was recommended. There was also a mild peroneal tenosynovitis extending proximally into the peroneal muscles. With septic synovitis and more proximal myositis, not excluded. There was mild subfacial edema with anterior and lateral compartment of the left lower leg. The initial surgical intervention was performed by Dr. Quint involving a left fourth digit amputation. On September the 8th, left ankle pain and erythema were worsening. September 9th, left ankle arthrocentesis performed by Dr. Quint, joint fluid sent for culture and joint analysis. The MRI of the left lower extremity performed and was reported. There was a large talar curl, joint effusion, extensive osteoarthritis and associated with synovitis. And number two, there was extensive tenosynovitis involving posterior tibial, flexor hallucis longus, and peroneus longus. And number three, there was a bone infarct with the distal tibial metaphysis. The vascular surgery service was consulted on September the 6th, but did not see the patient until September 9th. On September 11th, Dr. Abdelmaseya was consulted by Dr. Quint to evaluate RM due to the complexity of this condition. Surgical intervention was indicated to decompress multiple fluid collections, including the ankle joint. from September 7th initial CT to the day Dr. Abdelmaseh was consulted, the condition had progressively worsened. September 12th, there was ankle arthrocentesis and culture obtained. On September 9th, the results were positive for MSSA. The following procedures were performed: arthrotomy of the left ankle, arthrotomy of the subtalar joint, arthrotomy of the talonavicular joint, flexor hallucis tendon extensive synovectomy with repair lower extremity, posterior tibial tendon extensive synovectomy lower extremity, peroneus longus tendon extensive synovectomy lower extremity, excision of the os trigonum, and the compression of the anterior lateral and posterior compartment. On September 13th, 2 days later, post-op day one, needed for second stage intervention, JP drains were in place. September 14th, there was a second stage surgery, arthrotomy of the left ankle with extensive synovectomy and debridement of the lower extremity, flexor digitorum tendon, extensive synovectomy, repair of the lower extremity, posterior tibial tendon, extensive synovectomy, peroneus longus and peroneus brevis tendon extensive synovectomy. Left lower extremity fasciotomy was also completed at that time. On September 15, pain and erythema persisted, but overall improving was noted. Ostrigonum bone pathology negative for osteomyelitis. Drain collection was recorded. On September the 16th, the repeat CT of the lower extremity performed did not report any fluid collection. I also further reviewed the concern for lack of consents done by RM. I reviewed the entire chart of the 264 pages. On 9/7/2020, Dr. Quint, debridement of the partial amputation of the left fourth digit left foot, there was a consent sign. On 9/9, the second procedure by Dr. Quint, left ankle joint aspiration under fluoroscopy with possible IND of the left lower leg. And then by Dr. Abdelmaseh, 9/12 and 9/14, retrospectively, there was a consent signed and was in the chart. The complaint interview, I discussed the matters with the wife of RM over the phone call. She addressed all of which that she had initially stated in the complaint. My conclusion, I reviewed the entire file provided by Dr. Abdelmaseh and through the TMC Medical Center. I further reviewed the concerns provided by the wife of RM accordingly. In doing so, it was noted that there are some discrepancies in statements provided by the wife of patient RM. The statements pertaining to lack of consent is erroneous. Documentation of 264 pages provided by TMC fully create transparency that such consents were indeed reviewed with the patient and signed by the patient. And also, I'd like to add that in this day and age, you are not able to have any procedures done at any surgical center nor a hospital without going through the hoops of making sure that the consents are signed appropriately. And that's it. Documentation was thorough, supported by photographs. Patient did get admitted to TMC for cellulitis of the left foot observed by the RN, the nurse from the home health. The photographs were provided. The white blood cell count would justify the admission. From my expertise, procedures and stages are within standard of care, I felt. It is also important to notate that Dr. Quint was the consulting physician upon admission at TMC, and Dr. Abdelmaseh was consulted several days later. And I found that all those allegations against Dr. Abdelmaseh to be unsubstantiated. I'm available for any question.
Very fine report, Dr. Farahani.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely agree with your conclusions. You know, this is another unfortunate situation that can happen when somebody's got multiple disease processes and noncompliance issues have been discussed too. We already had a couple amputations, and patients who are on antipsychotics do have a tendency for neuropathy and can have a cause of treatment-induced diabetes. It comes from the medications I know throughout the chart, everybody's saying he's not diabetic, but he certainly did have some elevated sugars, and it may have come from that. And again, I agree, good documentation. That chart just flows and showing what the care that everybody did for this gentleman. And again, you know, it's just an unfortunate situation. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions for Dr. Farahani?
It was very complete, Dr. Farahani. I have no questions.
Thank you, sir.
No questions for Dr. Farahani. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Yolanda.
We have a few.
Now, do we have our...
We have a few concerns and issues.
No, pardon me. This is... Who is speaking?
This is Ed.
Okay. I was coming to you next, sir. Don't worry. Don't worry. Yeah. We need to remember to refer to you as RM. You can't state your name, so thank you. And let me give you before we let you speak, I need to hear from the doctor's attorney.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. The patient's wife has a significant misunderstanding of Dr. Abdelmasiah's role, and apparently has a significant misunderstanding of his non-compliance issues. So, you know, the records speak for themselves. The care provided was appropriate, and I don't really know what else to say. If you have questions, Dr. Abdelmasiah is on the phone, so he can answer those for you.
Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilana, do you have any questions for the doctor?
No, I don't.
No questions for me.
Thank you, gentlemen. All right. Now, thank you for being patient, RM, and we'll give you, if you can summarize your comments in 5 minutes, that'd be great. So please, go ahead.
I believe I can. That's it. I got one hearing aid in now. When I went in, it was supposed to do the tip of the fourth toe, and I was all good with that. And I had been to acupuncture that day. That's why my leg was seeping a little on the shins. And I've had this chronic, edema for 20 years. And what happened? And I don't have no diabetes. I got perfect blood. I mass produced it. And I was on chemo for 4 years. So I had no immune system. And then what he did is he had me sign. I thought he was going to put a needle in there and draw out something, you know, for my ankle. He never mentioned bags and hoses and cutting me. He butchered my tendons all the way around, my Achilles, my inside and outside tendons, made me basically a club foot. And then when we could pull the stitches days later, he put the long tweezers up in there with a big long nose and put it through three of them. And he said, "You want to see him cry?" to my wife. And she was having a nervous breakdown at that moment. And he pulled it like that. Then he said, "Well, you come back Monday and we'll do some more." So I looked at her and I concentrated on the light plug because I have a pretty high tolerance for pain. I don't go for pain pills. I don't even take them unless I'm in the hospital. And then once I did that, he put those tweezers down and sent his intern in, and he used the right tweezers, the little short ones. He'd spread it and pull it. Had no problem. And then I was going to go back in for pre-op, but then something didn't feel right. So I went into the VA and I got a hold of Dr. Jolly in podiatry. And he grabbed the front of my toes and the back of my leg, and where that hole was, it was like gangrene. And he pumped it, and my ankle and my heel bone come shooting out. It was all mush.
And then, but the CDC guy let me out of there. All these pages that you're talking about were not in there. I never had these appointments made. I didn't make any with him. No, I didn't want to go back because he freaked my wife out. So I went to Dr. Jolly, and then he had to cut it off at one spot. It looked like a prime rib. Then he went up a little farther, and then I had to get that healed, and it's already healed. But it's still got edema. But he cut off my daughter's tattoo. He basically destroyed my life. My quality of life is history. Because I used to work at the golf course as a ball kicker, and now I can't even ride around in a golf cart because my leg's too awkward. And I still can't even use my prosthetic. I'm just upset because he ruined the quality of life. I can't even work in my own backyard. So that's all I really got to say is I think he was dead wrong, and I didn't make no other appointments with him. None. Zero. That's it.
Sir, can you comment as to why you missed your appointments that Dr. Farahani listed?
I did it. I'm sorry. Yeah. I never received a notice or anything on an appointment. I never made them. I wasn't told they were there. Dr. Jolly, I didn't miss no appointments over there. They need to check that. Because Dr. Jolly couldn't believe what he did.
RM, I'm going to ask my other board members if they have questions for you. Dr. Ilano, Dr. Foreman? Gentlemen, do you have questions?
I've got a question.
Thank you.
Were you able to keep your physical therapy appointment?
Yeah, they sent me home to do it. They got a homeless.
Did you miss any physical therapy appointments?
No. I never received anything on appointment with him. But I have both pairs of scissors sitting here. Or whatever. I don't know what his deal is, but it ain't right.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Does anyone ever or have any other comments or final questions for the doctor and for the investigator or the investigator? Okay. Again, I think this is just obviously an unfortunate chain of events that can happen, multi-system disease. So, and like I said, the care that was received at TMC with all the specialties that were involved does not appear to be below the standard of care, and also for the two podiatrists that were involved. And we're just discussing Dr. Edelman Messiah. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to dismiss case 21-14-C, seeing that there are no violations of state statutes. Do I have a second? Thank you. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, since we have, thank you, I'm going to move to number 7 since Dr. Freestone is on the line. This is review, discussion, and possible action regarding National Practitioners Data Bank report that was received pertaining to the doctor. I'll go ahead and kind of make a little summary of that. And I'm sorry, we have counsel is present for Dr. Freestone, Mr. Moskow. And Dr. Freestone is on the line. There was reported from the National Practitioner Data Bank a settlement on a not a, there was no there was no generated complaint to this board, just a note from the National Practitioner Data Bank that a settlement was made for failure to remove a tourniquet from a left third toe following a flexor release. Doctor included his medical records, which I'm sure you all have reviewed. The patient had an ulcer on the right third toe, and that's the reason behind doing the flexor release was to relieve pressure from the tip of that toe. And the patient had history of kidney cancer, history of osteomyelitis, and the tourniquet was left on the toe the day after the surgery when his spouse removed the dressing for a change. That's when it was noted and it was removed. And no, luckily there was no permanent damage. So the terms of the settlement are confidential and can't be discussed. So we're sure that the doctor has learned about, you know, being vigilant about digital tourniquets. Too, I believe the gentleman was on is on a blood thinner also. So, does anyone? I'd like to hear from. So we don't have the complainant is not present. So I will ask the doctor to for any remarks he may have. Dr. Freestone. Hello? Dr. Freestone, are you there?
He's on mute.
He may have muted himself. Looks like somebody's popping on mute.
Dr. Freestone, if you're on the call, we cannot hear you. You need to unmute yourself. And you may have to hit star six.
He seeing patients this morning?
I believe he cleared his schedule to be here. It is possible that he had some patients with him.
Oh, okay, because we'll wait to see if we can get him back on. Otherwise, I would ask you to make remarks, but I'd like him also. He's not coming on.
Do we know which square he is, which number?
Heather, I think, has his.
Oh, he would be the, I think, that one, the 801.
Sorry, I'm back on.
There he is. Okay.
So, Dr. Freestone, this is Ken Moskow. To the extent that you've been talking, I don't know if you have or not, but no one's heard anything, so.
Dr. Freestone, Dr. Campbell, did you hear my summary of things?
I did not. Sorry.
Okay, well, let me kind of go, we'll just kind of go back over that. This was reported to us through the National Practitioner Data Bank, indicating a settlement on a failure to remove a tourniquet from a right third toe following a flexor release. We know that this patient, the tourniquet was found on the toe by the wife the day after surgery when she was doing a dressing change at home. The patient does have kidney cancer, a history of osteomyelitis, and I believe is also on a blood thinner. Anyway, there was no permanent damage caused to the toe, and the terms of the settlement were confidential and could not be discussed. So at this time, history of blood clots. I was correct. The patient is taking the Eliquis. Anyway, so would ask you for some remarks and then also from your counsel if you would like to?
Sure. Yeah, I've seen this patient a few times over the years for the same sore on his third toe. And we've talked about doing a flexor release in the past, and then I wouldn't see him for several months. Finally came in, I think about 8 months after the previous appointment, we decided to do that flexor release, got consent, did it, and unfortunately I did leave the little rubber band on his third toe. I believe I wrapped some Coban around his toe as a dressing, and then didn't realize that I hadn't taken the tourniquet off, unfortunately. I've never done that before. I'll never do it again. But thankfully, his toe did recover. The wound on the tip of the toe did heal, and there was no permanent damage to that toe.
Thank you. Dr. Yolano or Dr. Ford, or Mr. Moskow, do you have any remarks, sir? I'm sorry.
No, I not really. I would just piggyback on something that I think you started saying before we realized that Dr. Freestone was here, is that, you know, this is one of those mistakes, obviously, and Dr. Freestone just stated he's never made it before, he'll never make it again, and I think this is the kind of thing that will never be repeated.
Dr. Foreman, Dr. Yolano, do you have any questions?
I have no questions.
Hi, this is Dr. Freestone. You said you're not going to repeat this again. Did you office policy or made any case cards that this is not going to recur? What have you changed?
The change is that on the tray, the rubber band, if we ever use a tourniquet, doesn't get dropped into the trash. It gets put on the tray so that both myself and the medical assistants can see it there on the tray before the patient leaves.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I have a couple comments here. So we don't have an active complaint from the patient, but we've had some, you know, this isn't the first time this has happened with physicians with tourniquets, but I think based on the information in the medical records, I'm going to make a motion to open a board complaint. Hear me out. So I'm making a motion to open a board complaint. Do I have a second? Do I have a second?
Second.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Okay. Now that we voted to open a complaint, I'm going to make a motion to issue a letter of concern regarding the tourniquet issue being left under the right third toe after the surgery. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Any discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. And Dr. Freestone, thanks for making, those are good things to make to, you know, doing a count after surgery, that's a good way to prevent that. Appreciate you taking and reevaluating that. Thank you so much. All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you all. Good seeing everybody.
Thank you.
Stay well. All right. Let's go back, gentlemen, to four, review, discussion, and possible action order, board meeting minutes, our general session meeting minutes of 12-8-21. I did not find any issues. Did either of you gentlemen find anything that needs to be added or corrected?
I did not.
No.
Wonderful. I will then make a motion to accept general session minutes of 12-18-21, seeing it as written. No corrections or additions are to be made. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Oh, did I get a second? I'm so sorry. Did I not take a second? I didn't. Heather's shaking her head at me. Okay, I need a second, please. Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Okay, great. Thank you. We just get on a roll, you know? All right. So our next is C is under issuance of licenses. We have 10 applications here to read. Just a second. Our first is Lant Abernathy. Looks like everything is completed. Did anyone have any issues with this applicant? Questions for Heather?
No.
Hearing none, I'm going, now this, and this gentleman too won't complete his residency. We have the letter on June 30th of this year. So I'll make a motion to accept the application for licensure, and we'll issue the license upon completion of the residency program and payment of the license issuance fee.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Next is Sahab Dinesh. excuse me. Everything is complete here. Actually completed a residency in 21. So, is it in the midst of a diabetic limb fellowship? So, the application, I didn't find any issues. Did either of you gentlemen find any issues? Okay. Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the initial application for licensure and issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee. May I have a second? May I have a second? Are you guys still there? Dr. Yolano, are you there? Dr. Foreman? Did they mute? Poor guys. Wonders of technology.
Call cannot be completed as dialed. Please consult your directory and call again, or ask your operator for assistance. Welcome to Google Meet. Enter the meeting PIN followed by the pound key. Thank you. You're joining a call with four other people.
Dr. Yolano, Dr. Foreman, are you there?
Now we can hear you.
Yeah, we lost you there, and I think you were talking, so we missed. I had made that motion to accept Dr. Dinesh's application.
Seconded.
Thank you. Discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Okay. Next is Paige Danner. And everything looks complete on her application. Does anybody have any questions? Hearing none, I'm going to make a motion to accept her initial application for licensure and issue the license upon successful completion of her residency, which will be 6/17 of 22, and payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. The next is Keegan Duffler. Julfer, I'm so sorry, I probably mispronounced that name. Everything's complete here. There was an error on one letter, no, and there was correction as to the graduation date for the residency is 6:30 of 22. So if anybody doesn't have any issues, I'll go ahead and make a motion to accept the initial application for regular licensure and issue the license upon successful completion of the residency and payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Okay, our next is Jason Kaplan. Everything is in place here. Again, this gentleman will be graduating from the residency program at TNC on 6:30 of 22. Anybody have any issues?
No.
Okay. I'll make a motion to accept this initial application for licensure and to issue the license upon completion of the residency program and payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Our next is Jeff Korob. Like this is via comedy, there was nothing in here on his. I just wanted to make sure his residency. Did Heather? Did you? What did you get from the gentleman?
He sent me an email with the residency information. Everything looked good, so I just included that with his application file.
Oh, wonderful! Sounds good. Thank you. So anybody else have any questions or concerns there?
Nope.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to accept Dr. Korob's application for licensure via comedy, and we'll issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Okay, next is Chase Moffitt. Let's see here. Everything is, looks like he's been practicing in Washington State, but he does not fit the category of comedy. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to accept the application for initial licensure and issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Our next is Stephen Pachi. This gentleman's residency will be completed on 6/31/22. Anybody else see, or are there any concerns for anybody here?
I didn't see any.
Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to accept the initial application for licensure and issue the license upon successful completion of the residency and payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Discussion. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Next is Christopher Toth. This person has been employed out in podiatry since 2001, so this is an application via comedy. And Heather, did you get any other information regarding his residency?
And Madam Chair, board members, with Dr. Toth's application, I did go back to his application and I saw that he had included it.
Oh, okay. Because if it was a 2 or 3 year, that was when, okay. And at that time, that would have been what the norm was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're fine on that. That's why I just wanted to double check. So anyone else have questions, concerns? Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to make motion to accept the application for licensure via comedy and issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Discussion. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. And our next is Cesar Zanuga. Dr. Zanuga is also applying via comedy. And was there any information on residency for him? Did I miss something?
Madam Chair, board members, I did reach out to Dr. Zuniga, and he did submit his CV, which did have his residency, and again, everything looked complete to me, so I included that in his application file.
Wonderful. Thank you, Heather. Anybody have any other concerns or questions?
No.
All right. Well, then I will go ahead and move to accept this application for licensure via comedy and issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right. Our next is item is 6, which has to do with the telehealth registration form. So I'll have Heather review that with us.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Recent legislation became effective that requires boards to register health professionals to conduct telehealth services in Arizona. So I drafted an application, and I did consult with the board's assistant attorney general, Seamus Monahan, on the application. Additionally, I did submit the application to the governor's office for review and approval, and I've not received a response, and it's been a few months. So I'm putting it before the board for a review and whether there's any corrections or if the board would like to approve the application. We are required to have one now, and it should be on our website. And I can answer any questions.
I think, you know, it's a pretty straightforward application. So do you guys have any questions for Heather, or do you think anything needs to be added to that application form?
No, the application form looks good. I have a question. Is this going to be an extra fee associated with a license renewal if they want to be telehealth also?
A regular license?
No, Dr. Foreman. This is a telehealth registration. I have to look a little bit more into it, but I do believe that there's an expiration date. It's a non-renewable registration. It's not a license.
Okay.
Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions?
No, it was straightforward. It should be no problem. Okay.
Dr. Yolanda, this is Heather Broaddus. We couldn't quite understand you. Could you try to speak a little bit more clearly?
No questions. It was straightforward, the application.
Thank you. Okay, so everybody seems to be in agreement. So I'll make a motion to approve the telehealth registration form application.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Great. Okay, move on to 8, which is the review for action regarding supervision of hyperbaric oxygen. We got the call out to the Federation of Podiatric Medical Boards. You guys saw the information that came from other member boards as to how the supervision of HBO is handled in other states. And we do have a substantive policy statement that is on our website, but in discussion with board executive director and AAG, appears that the governor is wanting to kind of back off on the substantive policy statements. Am I correct, Shaman?
I'm not sure if it's the governor, but we just don't generally use them as much anymore. That way we don't lock ourselves into a policy.
Because, you know, when you look at this option of treatment, you know, I don't know that there's that many, you know, that many people out there, unless you're working in a big wound clinic, that you would be interested in doing this in your practice. But you know, when you consider that the hyperbaric is there to treat a lower extremity wound, and that's how our definition of our state statute reads, that, you know, that's a medical treatment. So, and a lot of the other states, you know, kind of presented the same verbiage. So I think, you know, in this question we have from Dr. Roeder about him supervising that there's nothing really state statute, I mean, on our definition that would disallow that. You know, when he indicated that he has, you know, malpractice coverage because it's via the hospital, et cetera, and he would take that course, that hyperbaric course. He can't be certified because he's not an MD or a DO, but he certainly, you know, you could certainly get education in order for that. And then, you know, if a complaint ever came up, it would be taken like anything else we do on a case-to-case basis. So I would certainly, obviously, like to hear your opinion, you know, what you guys think. Because I think neither one of you, I think Dr. Foreman said maybe last month he hadn't ordered a HBO treatment in 10 years or something. I mean, you know. So.
Yeah, I haven't really run in a while.
Yeah. How about you, Dr. Ilana? Are you using it?
No, I don't use the hyperbaric oxygen. I usually refer to a wound care center, and they would do it.
Yeah.
For me personally, no.
Okay. So I think that's really going to be that's the majority of practitioners in this state. So I just think in regards to, you know, Dr. Roeder's question, it's okay, but as long as, like I said, I think as long as he is gets the education, it's okay by his, you know, the hospital credentials him for it, you know, that we just kind of remove that substantive policy statement from the website. And just, Seamus, do you have something to do? We don't need a motion to do that. Okay. I'll just, yeah, ask Heather to remove that from our website. So, you know, a lot of these other states, I mean, I think if you want that to have a statute, then you got to go, you know, if you want it in statute and rule and all that, then you got to go through the whole process of legislative action, and that, you know, that takes time. So I think, you know, this is probably our simplest answer for this situation. So should we be then, we need to send Dr. Roeder any kind of letter, or do we need to do anything like that to let him know that?
Madam Chair, board members, I can send Dr. Roeder an email letting him know that we removed the substantive policy statement, and if he's interested, he could listen to the audio file.
Okay, that's good, yeah.
He can contact him.
Do you gentlemen have any comments, questions, concerns, opinions?
As long as it's, I have no, I think it's fine for him to do it. As long as it's for the Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General, I'm fine with it.
This falls into the scope of our practice. I see no problems with this.
So if everybody's in agreement with that, then Heather will just remove that. Okay? Sounds great. We don't need to vote on it, gentlemen, so that makes it nice. So Heather's Executive Director's Report number 9.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. As the board is aware, complaint number 2103C pertaining to Dr. Seth Clark was moved to an informal hearing, and through his attorney, Mr. Crawford, it was requested that it be moved directly to a formal hearing in front of an administrative law judge. We do have a meeting with Mr. Crawford, Dr. Clark, Dr. Campbell, Mr. Monahan, and myself on January 26, 2022 to discuss settling the matter before moving it to formal hearing. And we will keep the board apprised on that matter. The 2022 legislative session has begun. A summary of the bills that will potentially affect the board will be on the February 9th, 2022 board agenda. It's a little too early to know exactly what bills are out there that may affect the board. On January 6th, 2022, the board office did receive approval from the governor's office for the exemption of the rulemaking moratorium. So the initial documents were submitted to the Secretary of State's office, and since I sent out the board materials, I did get the stamped documents back. There is about a three-week lag before the proposed rulemaking is put in and published in the Secretary of State's in-progress rulemaking register. So that date will be January 28th, and I will put the draft rules on the board's website at that time as well for public comment, and the record will close on March 6th. And then we still have to go to the governor's regulatory review council after that and through the final notice of proposed rulemaking. So there's still quite a bit of time that we have before this will be completed. So I will keep the board updated on this as well. The retention schedule that I've been working on since October 2020 was finally approved by Library and Archives. So I will be archiving old files according to the board's new retention schedule. I included a copy of the current budget, and I can answer any questions on that. And I also included the current complaint log. No new complaints were added since I sent board materials. So I'm available to answer any questions.
Can you make a remark about board members getting board members?
Yes, Madam Chair, board members, I've not received any more correspondence from the governor's office regarding board member appointments. Again, the last correspondence I received was just that the governor's office is working on appointing public members for all boards, so I will continue to follow up with the governor's office.
Anybody else have any questions for Heather?
No.
All right. 10 is summary of current events. Is there anything in that category? Uh, 11 is call to the public. I'll make the call to the public. There is no one remaining in the audience. Does anyone for 12 have any items they'd like to see discussed at future meetings? And again, if something comes up that you'd like to see on the agenda, just please call Heather. Get that up on the agenda. Our next meeting, this is number 8. Our next board meeting is February the 9th, 2022. That's in 3 weeks. Time since we were a week late on this meeting. So, and I'll take one final call for any comments or concerns. And hearing none, I will move to adjourn the meeting at 10:01 a.m. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you.
Thank you.